hello and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Salmon.
Peter, you look dressed for revenge today.
Oh yeah. I'm feeling revenge. Jennifer Garner, she gave that to me right after watching that film.
Oh yeah, I wanted to go right out there and crack some skulls.
I felt angry after.
After disappearing for 5 years to train, it's, yeah.
But I took an Uber after the film, and he's lucky he didn't get something, you know?
Oh my.
I was feeling rage.
You left a one-star rating.
Yeah.
Rebel without a cause. End Credits here is a local movie show for local movie fans, and we are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new revenge action thriller, Peppermint. That is in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some of the recent news items from the past week, including Captain Marvel. New images have been released for the film. And Kevin Feige, who's the head of Marvel, promises more female superheroes. But is he a bit behind the times? And then the Academy is putting a pause on their most popular film Oscar. Is this a good move? And will the Oscars try again when the controversy goes away? And finally, The Washington Post did a study of toxic internet fandom, and we'll talk about what their results uncovered. But first, the saga of one Jeffrey Owens, who people of a certain age, like Peter over here, may not remember, was one of the stars of The Cosby Show back in the 80s. The Cosby Show probably... not getting a lot of play these days because I think just about everybody pulled it down after.
Yeah. I remember Cinema One was selling it for like a dollar each season.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. You should have picked it up if you wanted to watch it.
Well, I'm not sure if I wanted to watch it, but so Jeffrey Owens was one of the stars. He played Theo, who was the husband of the eldest daughter, Sandra. So he came into the show like in season three, I think. But he was seen working at Trader Joe's. It's a grocery chain in the United States. So he was there bagging groceries. Somebody took a picture of him, and it went to the Daily Mail. And then it kind of got siphoned through the news machine, let's call it. That look at this guy's fall from grace. But I think, as Trevor Noah aptly put it, you know, there are worse things former stars of The Cosby Show could be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's also a happy ending because a lot of people have, like, have talked to him about getting work, or like acting work.
Yeah, giving him a buzz again. So if he wants to start acting again, now's a pretty good time.
Well, I think he never stopped because I was reading, like, he was doing Broadway in 2013.
Yeah, he just hasn't been on, like, a popular show.
Yeah, so, but I mean, it's...
But he's still doing, you know, pilots and things like that.
Right. It's interesting, though, because I was reading a New Yorker article that was talking about the whole situation, and somebody pointed out, like, actors, we hear a lot about the gig economy, but actors are sort of like the original gig economy, because you, like, no matter what role you get, there's an expiry date, whether, you know, if that's in, like, a popular series.
Even like a TV show.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, I guess, if you sign on to like Coronation Street or something. But other than shows like that, yeah, you're going to have a deadline. You're gonna...
Right. Unless they decide to kill you, or unless you decide you want out, you know, you probably have a job for life on Coronation Street.
Yeah, but it's a tough job.
Yeah.
Terry Crews made a comment about it. Mm-hmm. He said that it's similar to when he was a football star.
Yeah.
And then right after, he had to, you know, work at restaurants and things like that, because it's the A-list people. They make enough that they, you know, they could probably retire after. But Jeffrey Owens, he was the main character in it, but, you know, he didn't make enough. Like, he had to work after, and it's good that he's still maintaining that.
Well, I think he got, like, billing after, like, even Keisha Knight Pullman. But
yeah.
I mean, that's a good point, too, is that there are a lot of really sad stories about professional athletes who were, you know, maybe not at the Michael Jordan echelon, but were certainly in demand, enjoyed a long career, made millions of dollars, but then are bankrupt a couple of years after they quit because you know, there's no real money management there, or
can't use it on a resume, right?
Okay. And so unless you're picked up as some sort of coach, you know, there's, I guess, options in sports broadcasting.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, there's only so many of those jobs. Right. Yeah. Yeah, there's only so many of those jobs, unless you're somebody like, you know, Mike Pinball Clemens, yeah, who has had a long career after retiring from the Toronto Argos, basically as Mike Pinball Clemens, the mayor in waiting of Toronto. He's, you know, it's hard to seize those opportunities. And I think Cynthia Nixon, who is running for the governor of New York right now, former star of Sex and the City, Cynthia Nixon.
Oh, Cynthia Nixon. Yeah, that's Cynthia Nixon. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I'd vote for her if I was there.
In case people didn't pick up on her name right away. But she said, like, this is a snapshot of what a working actor's life looks like.
Yeah.
That, you know, one day you are in a Broadway hit, or you're on a hit HBO show, or you're the 12th lead in the Cosby Show. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, you know, in order to pay the bills, you have to bag groceries. You have to, you know, get a quote unquote real job. Although, I think acting is a real job. It requires real skill, and real talent, and real dedication.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like a. I think the original idea behind this was like, oh, look at this guy. He used to be somebody. Now he's a nobody at Trader Joe's.
Yeah, it was more like upset, but now it's kind of helped him, and it's made people realize like what a lot of actors have to do, like.
Right.
They looked at him doing this as a rare thing.
Yes,
but
yes.
He made people realize that it's not.
Yeah, and I enjoyed the humility on all sides of it because, you know,
he was real chill about it.
Yeah, he's like, you know, it's work. Work is work. And, you know, there's no shame in having any job.
Yeah.
Well,
you got to be Tyler Perry, right? Or Tyler Perry. Tyler yeah. Perry, after it invited him to some event.
So, yeah, and he's going to be on one of Tyler Perry's shows.
Yeah, exactly, which is amazing.
Yeah, so it's hard to get it's hard to sort of find a bigger fairy godfather than than Tyler Perry. And Trader Joe's itself, you know, Jeffrey Owens has so many opportunities now. He said to Trader Joe's, like, you know, I think I might have to quit. Trader Joe's has said to him, like, oh no, take a temporary leave of absence.
Oh, really? So he is still working.
So he
can
go back to Trader Joe's.
That's awesome.
When, if the opportunities don't keep coming. So I found this entire situation, considering the business we're talking about, just a wonderful example of humility.
Yeah.
And
even actors are humans. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well spotted. But yeah, I'm on the one hand very happy that, you know, Jeffrey Owens has been rediscovered, as it were. But I think there's a part of me that's like, he is one of several actors who are out of work and sort of maybe all deserve work. Because I think the statistic was like the members of the Screen Actors Guild, like 99% of them are unemployed at any given time.
Yeah, when it comes to acting, this sort of thing happens all the time.
Right.
That I always forget his name, but in Veronica Mars, the first season, like the main male character, after that, he just quit. He became a lawyer because he was quicker to become a lawyer than to make money in other acting roles.
You mean Percy Diggs?
I think so. The person who also has epilepsy in the first season of Veronica Mars.
Oh, the guy that played Teddy. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm going through the Veronica Mars cast.
Yeah,
and Jason Doerrig still works. Enrico Calantonio still works.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean,
it happens all the time.
The guy from Wonder Years, the one that everybody think grows up to be
Ben
Marilyn
Savage or Fred?
No, not Fred Savage. Like his best friend Paul, who everyone thought grew up to be Marilyn Manson. He's like an attorney now.
Yeah.
So
because they make more money than, you know, with those kinds of jobs, I guess.
Well, not only that, but you're not. You know,
it's
I think,
a job you're gonna
I think
have
child
until you
actors
retire.
In particular, you know, there's unless you're Jodie Foster,
Macaulay Culkin.
Or well, is Macaulay Culkin really an example?
I think he's doing okay right now. He's probably gonna make some upcoming films. Shia LaBeouf, I guess, maybe
Shia LaBeouf may be
a better example.
Well, he went into performance art, which was a lateral move.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell, I guess. Kurt Russell was in Disney movies when he was young, like the computer wore tennis shoes. Cool. Speaking of Disney movies, Entertainment Weekly released the first images from Captain Marvel, which is the next big Marvel Studios movies. Vince is not going to be pleased we're talking about a Marvel Studios movie, but
he'll be reviewing it. He could be reviewing it.
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Vince. But Kevin Feige, who is the head of Marvel Studios, was also talking about Captain Marvel. And he was talking about how, you know, he's looking forward to a point where, you know, female superheroes aren't going to be a novelty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been waiting a long time for this, mostly because of the stink of Elektra and Catwoman.
Oh, yeah.
Which were 14 and 13 years ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. But they wrecked it. They wrecked it.
Well, I mean, that's
they shouldn't have, but they did.
Those were just bad movies.
Yeah.
And
they had nothing to do with it being female main characters.
They were just really bad. Like, Elektra looks like it was made, you know, on the weekends by the people who are making a different, better movie. And they're like, let's just grind out this Elektra thing we're doing. You know, we'll just use the same sets. And, it's just bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, Daredevil was bad, too. It was a spinoff of a bad film.
I don't mind Daredevil.
I saw it as a kid and I did like it, but looking back,
it has some charm. And I like Colin Farrell as Bullseye in it, just like chewing the scenery.
He did an okay job.
And I want a uniform, and just like how he's like how he's introduced in an Irish bar drinking a beer when not looking at the dartboard and throwing darts and hitting bullseyes every time. I love that characterization. It's just, I mean, it was also like peak Colin Farrell when he was like in a new movie every month and a half. What were we talking about? Captain Marvel.
Yeah, Captain Marvel.
but it seems bizarre to me that, you know, you're blaming these two films when you've had like strings of hits, like the Underworld movies, the Resident Evil movies, the Hunger Games movies, which are not explicitly superhero movies.
But they're blockbuster films starring like a female lead in their action adventure, like superhero films.
Yes. That's just my point, is that they're basically superhero films because they just weren't based on comics or in the superhero kind of mold. Mm-hmm. Like something like Captain Marvel's going to be, or what Wonder Woman was last year. And it just seems incredibly short-sighted to say that, especially when Marvel, especially, like DC, its third film out. Or the fourth film out, if their extended universe was Wonder Woman. Mm. Captain Marvel is the 21st Marvel movie. And they've had a character, a female superhero character, in the bullpen since the 2010, beginning. Who could easily be in her own movie.
Yeah.
And they keep saying, it's not the time, it's not the time. Mm. Oh, we're thinking about it, we're working on it, we've got a script going. And it's just, no. By the time we actually, like, I assume we're going to get a Black Widow movie at some point, but by the time it happens...
She's been in it since, like, the very beginning.
Iron Man 2.
Yeah, Iron Man 2, so yeah.
By the time it happens, it's the novelty of it...
It'll be gone. It
should have happened in after the Avengers or something like that. And it's something like, I can't even imagine they'd have to spend that much money to make a Black Widow movie.
No, not at all.
Because the way I...
Well, and it's Disney. They have enough money for anything. Anything.
You're right. It is Disney, so you know they could throw somebody a couple of bucks.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is getting better, because I will note that Ant-Man and the Wasp, the star of that was
That's
the Wasp.
True. Yeah, she was on the posters and the trailers even more than Paul Rudd was.
And then you also have, you know, characters like Valkyrie and Thor Ragnarok, and Tessa Thompson was really good in that. And I think there was like
in the Black Panther film.
There was Diane Guerrero, Lupita Nyong'o, and Letitia Wright are all great in that movie.
Hopefully some of them have spinoffs.
Yeah,
maybe not some of those like really minor characters, but
I know in the Black Panther comic recently,
like
his sister took over because he was too critically injured to carry on as Black Panther, so she becomes Black Panther. So,
after Captain Marvel, they better not be the one female lead movie for like, you know, the next 10 years.
It's like we've got
start
it. Yeah.
Just a whole new spree of them releasing a bunch of really great ones.
Well, the same could be said for, you know, Black Wonder Panther Woman. Too.
Yeah.
Like, that's not like, let not like, okay, we've got black people covered with Black Panther.
Yeah. I want to see Luke Cage on the big screen.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah. And people forget about those too, because I guess they are because they're on TV, but are instead of in the theater too. But yeah, Jessica Jones is a great female hero.
Yes.
You know, undeniably flawed, but still great. Speaking of popularity contests.
And flawed.
And flawed ideas. It was announced last week that the... we talked about this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we did.
Oh, were you here for that?
Yeah, I was.
So much happens in a week. I forgot that one. Anyway, moving on. So the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences decided that they're going to pull the achievement in popular film category for this coming year's Oscars. They said they're going to look at it for the 2020 Oscars. Mm. I, however, would be very surprised if it did end up
coming back.
Yeah. Because they're not going to say, we were 100% wrong. But they are saying, like, we're going to pull it for this year and bring it back next year after we do some feedback.
Yeah. And they're not going to get good feedback. So
it's not coming back. That's right. It's just, I mean, the whole idea is bizarre to begin with, just as like sort of, I think the popular opinion is it was sort of at the insistence of ABC, who broadcast the Oscars in the States, that we have to do something to make more people watch the Oscars and to turn, basically do the People's Choice Award for one category.
Yeah.
What's the way to do that? And that seems...
I'm not saying it was a good idea, but I think it would have worked at least a bit. I think it would have raised the views at least a teeny tiny pinch. I was very curious about it. There was a lot of people that were probably curious about it and would watch the Oscars just for that.
I think that's accurate to say that, like, it would have gotten some curiosity. Mm-hmm. Like people would have tuned in to see how that would have all unfolded. I think the core idea of it, though, is that... well, first of all, this is what expanding the Best Picture category to as many as 10 was supposed to remedy. And then the other fact of the matter is, how much of about watching these award shows is about actually, it's about actual familiarity with the winners as opposed to watching the pageantry and the pomp. Because I haven't, because I don't have a lot of free time, I didn't go back and like study the ratings in years where the presumptive Best Picture winner was a popular film, something like Titanic or Lord of the Rings, versus when it's going to be, you know, La La Land or Moonlight or Spotlight, you know, a smaller film that has that had a smaller, you know, audience.
The guy in Black Panther, the Black Panther, Chadwick Boseman.
The Black Panther.
Yeah, well, it's true. He was the one that kind of made them get rid of it too, right?
Yeah.
Because he was upset because he knew they didn't even say it. His assumptions. And Crazy Rich Asians.
Right.
Their cast too. They were mad that they were probably going to be on the popular category as opposed to Best Picture.
Yeah.
And I hope they know now that they've helped get rid of the popular Oscar. They're not going to get nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards.
Well, I'm not sure Crazy Rich Asians would get Best Picture, but
no,
I don't think
Black Panther would either. Too much of a grand blockbuster. None of it doesn't go in depth enough into the characters, and it's not Indian and I don't want to sound pretentious, artsy enough for what gets nominated nowadays for Best Picture.
I'm not so sure. I mean, there's some interesting subtext to Black Panther versus, you know, maybe Skyfall, which is like an artistically excellent film, but at its heart, it's basically a James Bond movie.
Yeah.
Whereas there's a lot of interesting social commentary going on in Black Panther. And I would also argue in The Dark Knight as well, which is why it was a shame that The Dark Knight didn't get nominated. But it's not unusual. It's not unusual for popular movies to get, like, Titanic was nominated. Lord of the Rings was nominated.
That was back in the day, though.
Avatar was nominated.
Yeah, but it didn't
win. I think Conception was nominated.
Probably.
So, you know, E.T., Star Wars, Jaws, I think Close Encounters was. You know, popular films have gotten nominated. I mean, Al Pacino was nominated for playing the bad guy in Dick Tracy.
I think that is very deserved. 100%.
Big boy Caprice.
Yeah. It's just for me, when it comes to Black Panther, we're just at the day and age where it's not just a singular huge blockbuster. It's connected to so many others. And it's owned by Disney to the point where it's like a blockbuster. Like, it's just, it's as much of a block, but it's even more like a blockbuster than Titanic. Like, it's huge. And it's connected to Hollywood through so many different companies and things.
Yeah, I mean, there are two things working against it. One, it seems that I think Heath Ledger aside, which I think his Oscar win was more for Heath Ledger than the fact that he was Heath Ledger playing the Joker.
Yeah.
The Academy seems wholly difficult in seeing artistic merit in comic book movies.
Yeah.
It's like one big Ethan Hawke. Because he added comments about comic book movies a couple of weeks ago.
What? Negative? Negative comments?
Yeah. He sees no artistic value in them at all, basically. Ooh. He was taking shots at Logan, which was nominated for an Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah, Logan is amazing.
So, I mean, that may be a crack in the wall.
Oh, Black Panther, don't get me wrong. It'll get, like, minor Academy Award nominations.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it'll get... Mm-hmm. But, you know, it'll get those... For sure, like sound mixing and sound editing and visual effects and costumes and all that. Like, especially costumes. Like, the costumes in that are amazing. But, so it's a comic book movie thing. And then, as you were saying, it's Disney. It's the machine.
Yeah.
The Walt Disney Studio is a franchise factory now.
Yeah, bigger than Viacom now, aren't they?
Yeah, they're bigger than anybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got Star Wars. They've got... They've got Marvel. They've got Pixar, which is itself a brand. The rest of their like live action slate is mostly remakes of other Disney properties, be they like the animated ones like Cinderella or Beauty and the Beast or
Dumbo.
Well, yeah, Dumbo. And then there's like a Mary Poppins sequel coming out later this year.
With Dick Van Dyke in it.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Yeah.
That's crazy. sorry, that was off tangent.
Going back to actors who need to work.
Yeah.
You know, Dick Van...
I didn't know he was still alive until watching the trailer for it. But good on him for being, you know...
Good for him for still being alive.
It. Yeah.
Good for him. I'm not sure if that's an example of toxic internet fandom, but that's the next topic.
There's probably a fandom on some, like, older forums for Mary Poppins.
I meant for Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, for Dick Van Dyke.
There's definitely an older forum for Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, yeah.
It's called the Seniors at Starbury at 9 o'clock in the morning. The Washington Post actually studied thousands of Star Wars posts on Twitter to see if there is a quantifiable negativity in certain corners of fandom. And what they discovered was that female fans get more harassment than male fans of Star Wars, and that Kelly Marie Tran, who played the character of Rose in The Last Jedi, received 60% more hate speech than all other posts related to Star Wars. So I guess if you wanted to, you know, quantify the toxicity on the internet, Washington Post has got you covered because...
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really prove anything we don't already know.
Yeah, but it's not surprising.
No.
At all. Those percentages could have been higher for all, you know.
Well,
it's still way too high, but it wouldn't have surprised me if it was even higher.
Right.
Yeah, especially for not nerds, but the nerd culture, right? Like the nerd fandom, the Star Wars fandom. I don't know. There just seems to be too much sexism within it, within all fandoms.
Yeah, but it seems
all fandoms
to be...
that originated as more males, right? Like Star Wars.
Yeah, but it seems to be that this area is more specifically. And I remember when Ocean's 8 came out. After I came out of Ocean's 8, and I had a good time at Ocean's 8, I looked up on Twitter, like, I wonder how many people are hating on Ocean's 8. It actually wasn't that many. Like, some people didn't like the film, obviously, but there was no, like, how dare they remake Ocean's 11 with all women? Which it was the instantaneous negative reaction about Paul Feig's Ghostbusters. Like, how dare you make a movie with an all-female cast as a remake of this other movie that we all love so much?
Yeah.
It may be an indication that maybe there aren't as many Ocean's 11 fans as there are Ghostbusters fans. But I was also reading a piece, I can't remember where, but they're making the point that, you know, Ocean's 11 is also like a comedy and, you know, kind of a heist movie. It doesn't fall into a nerd category like Ghostbusters does, where, you know, whether that's like comedy nerds, you know, people who, you know, religiously follow the works of Bill Murray or Dan Aykroyd or, you know, any of the old Second City and Saturday Night Live people, or, you know, supernatural nerds also like Dan Aykroyd, who, yeah, you know, just love ghosts and goblins and things, and or, you know, love that aesthetic. It just seems that when it comes to nerdy things, this is a pervasive, and
it's just bigger.
Yeah,
right. It's just, yeah, huge, and it's more, and has been for a while within the internet, right? Reddit forums, different things like that, and
yeah.
I don't know. It's just bigger. And also, I think for Ocean's 8 and Ghostbusters, the reason there probably wasn't as much hate is because these, you know, sexists didn't go to theaters to see them, right? Because it is a full female cast. Whereas,
right,
even though there is more females that are centric, they're still going to see the Star Wars they've always loved, right?
Right. That was a big thing about Ghostbusters, is like people were downvoting the trailer.
Yeah.
And people were going to, like, IMDb and, like, submitting, like, one-star reviews for a movie that was still months away from coming out. Because,
which you can't do. You can't do that.
Well, you can do it, but you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Yes.
In my world, you can't do that. So don't you do that. But then it got okay reviews. And same with, yeah, Ocean's 8. There were... I didn't love Ghostbusters, but it was totally fine. And Ocean's 8 was great.
I gave it a good review.
Did
you? I got accused, yeah, of being a shill for Sony Pictures.
Oh, well, Sony is pretty great.
But no, I did not get a check from Sony,
yeah,
Pictures, I just wanted to say. And then I when it came out on DVD, I kind of wrote like another piece. I guess I was kind of trolling.
Mm-hmm.
I've been accused of trolling this week. But this was actually, this, you know, I'm not really a troll, but I think in this case I was trolling, where it came out on DVD and I talked about how, you know what, still like it, still,
yeah,
not made by
good.
Sony, and people were like, "You're a liar." I was just like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah.
This one isn't paid for. Not that they aren't remember paid for, but, you know, by the studio.
But it's just, yeah, back to the Star Wars thing. It,
yeah,
started the main characters right in the very beginning, the 77. It was like Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, you know. Princess Leia was in it, but the central characters were...
But she was a damsel in distress.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the plots, like you said, the original plots, yeah, were like... it was a space opera that was based around, yeah, saving a female. So I think that's why, in the original kind of foundation of the nerd culture for Star Wars,
mm-hmm,
it's continued to be... have more sexes in it than a lot of the others.
Yeah, the Pop Culture Detective, which is a real thing on YouTube, had an interesting breakdown of this about The Last Jedi, I mean, and why some quarters may not like it. And he says, because when you see a leading man in an action-adventure movie, it's supposed to be, you know, this character is supposed to be decisive, righteous, and respected. So people feel entitled to this portrayal of manhood, and instead what they see in The Last Jedi is that the male characters are reprimanded, mm-hmm, for their flaws and for their negatives, and done so, they're challenged on this by the female characters, and that happens in all quarters of the movie. So it's a story about men learning to trust women's ideas and decisions and become better people because of it.
Yeah, which is good.
Which should be good.
Yeah, which should be good. Yeah, and Rogue One was a lot like that too. But
I mean,
I would say even more so in a lot of ways.
Right. That's been the shift in tone of this, is by introducing Rey, mm-hmm, and Jyn Erso,
better
and
than Mark
Rose.
Hamill, better than Luke Skywalker.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. Bold statement.
Bold. We'll wait for the feedback on that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
there's been a very pointed direction that Kathleen Kennedy's been saying, mm-hmm, as the head of Star Wars, or as the head of Lucasfilm, rather, which is ostensibly the head of Star Wars, but to say, you know, we're going to have more female characters, more diversity, more representation. The women are pointedly the heroes. They are pointedly giving out the orders. And, you know, because it is a fandom that should belong to everyone.
Mm-hmm. And I think it will change. I think it'll get better and better.
Well, from Peter's mouth to the internet's ears.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. We're going to take a break for some music and then come back with our review of Peppermint. And to warm you up, here is The Charming Horses with a song from their recently released EP, which is called Peppermint. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Watching someone take everything from you, all you have, all you're ever gonna have, just gone. Hurts, doesn't it? Knowing that it's all over and there is nothing you can do about it. You didn't serve justice, Your Honor.
Guess what happens next? That was a clip from Peppermint. It is the new film from Pierre Morel, and it stars Jennifer Garner, John Gallagher Jr., John Ortiz, and Juan Pablo Raba. As you may have inferred or have seen in the ads, Jennifer Garner plays a wife and mother who's husband and daughter is killed by some gentleman of the drug dealing persuasion, and she decides to take a course of revenge in her own hands by killing the corrupt cops, the corrupt attorneys, the corrupt judge, and every single gangbanger she can lay her hands on.
A ton of people.
Yeah. Like, yeah, she has a busy couple of days.
Yeah.
Anyway, what did you think of Peppermint?
I thought Peppermint was decent. It's enjoyable. If you really just like genuine action-adventure films, like just, you know, a thriller, mm-hmm. you'll enjoy it. It's got a really good amount of action. Like, when we reviewed Sicario 2, we were talking about some really violent, crazy action, right?
Yes.
There's some even crazier stuff in this. And I think presented well, like the clip we just showed, mm-hmm. that was one of my favorite scenes, and it was a little messed up, but it was gory, but it was enjoyable. And that was pretty much it. It was a lot like Taken, which he also directed.
Yeah,
she loses her daughter and she goes out for the revenge, and she revenges against them in a fun way, but in a more objective way, it's not like a remarkable film. The acting was okay, but there was nothing special. There wasn't really any characters I could relate to or mm-hmm. enjoy. And I think I liked her character, so Jennifer Garner, Riley North, I liked her character a lot less than I think the director intended. Because she did some things where you're supposed to view her as, you know, a rebel. Someone who's doing some illegal things, but that you can relate to and that you're okay with. She did some things that I'm not so sure I'm okay with. And it just kind of made me not be able to relate to her or be glad that she's doing a lot of what she's doing.
Yeah, they didn't. What I think they should have done more was sort of shade in, because there's this idea that she's hiding out in Skid Row, where all the homeless people in Los Angeles live, and there's this idea that's touched upon but not really addressed that she's been, as she's been planning her revenge, she's also been cleaning up the streets and protecting the people of Skid Row.
The people.
And that's something I remember you were here for, Equalizer. That does really well, where it manages to pursue an A story but also show these B stories of Denzel Washington
and
helping
he was
out
a lot
people.
More lovable. And I think he has more. I think he has way better reasonings for doing what he's doing.
Right.
Also, for this, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I think the flashback showing what happened to her daughter was way too long. It was a huge old, like, what, 20-minute glimpse into her past?
Yeah, I think we get the idea.
Yes.
I think...
It made it seem a little too messed up to see a child die. Getting to know that child for so long and then actually getting to view with your eyes her dying, I don't know.
Right,
It was a bit too much for me.
I was thinking that. Although I love the courtroom scene.
Yes. Because
there's something so unsettling about it. I mean, that's sort of like the one sort of dramatic scene.
And too realistic.
Where she sort of realizes that the men who killed her family are not going to be punished, and it just seems like just another day in court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole underlying idea behind this is like everyone's corrupt and just like letting people who kill children go free, even if they are members of a powerful drug cartel, seems ludicrous. But when you see Jennifer Garner's reaction to that, it is a powerful moment.
Yeah.
And I think she does – her reaction to that scene is really well done. It's like really unsettling when you see these guys like kind of smirk when she's being tased. And it's like, dude, they just freed the beast. You know, you're going to be dead in seconds.
I hope she did get those security guards too. I don't think they showed it, but I hope she got them too.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
The movie starts out where she's kind of already killed guys who did the actual killing, and now she's like working her way up the chain. I was disappointed by the fact they didn't show her getting the oily lawyer who is representing the gangbangers, who like comes into her house and gives her the big like, you know, maybe it's time for you to move somewhere else and get a new life. Here's a big envelope full of money.
I think they just gave a brief mention of him, like he died in a fire or something like that.
Yeah. But he's the one I wanted to see
die. He was very interesting. I would have been okay if he was the central villain throughout the whole film. That little sketchy lawyer.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other big problem is the villain, Diego Garcia. First of all, like, you have a Hispanic person and it's like, well, I just need two Hispanic names, Diego and Garcia.
Yep.
There's your villain. Like, and the other thing is, for a movie like this, which I think Pierre Morel is... He wants it to be more serious than I think he – or he's trying to make it more serious than I think he even wants to be, because, like, I was laughing during the course of this. Like, there's a gunfight in a pinata store.
Yeah, I feel like he would be the main villain in a comedy.
Yeah. Like, I think that Diego Garcia should have been, like, a bigger villain. He should have been, like, a scenery-chewing villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every scene of him should be, like, yelling. He should be like, "You can't kill one mother!" Like, you guys go out there and blow up the whole neighborhood. I don't care. Like,
ruthless.
Like, yeah, just like show him like just being absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
And there's this whole inference that he basically, you know, prays to death because he has all these like skeleton statues around. I think it's supposed to be like Santa Muerte or something.
Yeah. So they don't go in depth enough for us to know.
So it's like, you can't give me a crazy drug dealer who prays to the saint of death. You know, he's just like, he's like,
and not show
this woman's really ruining my business.
Yeah. I know. I wanted to like see him praying to that devil or whatever it is he does. And I wanted to see the actual people who shot her child more, because they looked ruthless. They looked scary. I would have.
Yeah, those guys look scary. More. But yeah, it's just the phrasing of the villain is, you know, it's just like, she's just ruining his day.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like she's tearing apart his whole organization. And there's this scene where he's like meeting with a higher up in the cartel. And he's like, you know what? You've kind of been like dropping the ball. You know,
yeah,
your guys are being
up.
Found dead. You're losing drug shipments. And Garcia says like, oh, everyone's always trying to take out the big dog, but they're just little dogs. And the cartel guy says to him, no, no, no. You're a little dog.
Yeah. Maybe they were hoping to be a sequel or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I'm wondering that because I think it is sort of set up for
franchise definitely.
Potential. But, the villains, I think they could have done more with. I think it should have been, like, more warriors than, I think, because I think there's been a lot of discussion online about whether having a movie about a white woman whose family is killed by Hispanic criminals. Yeah.
And her whole goal is to kill a bunch of...
And her going... Yeah, her finding Second Amendment solutions to them is sort of the right tone.
Mm-hmm.
When you have the president of the United States basically saying he's running against Latino gangsters who are trying to take over the country, whether that's the right tone. But
I think the cartel is also overused in media, at sure. least like recently, like Cesario 2 was in it, you know, like Better Call Saul. It's in a lot of different places. Narcos.
Yeah. Well, this guy,
John Gallagher Jr., who played Garcia, he's from Narcos. He was Pablo Escobar's cousin.
He plays the cop. John Gallagher Jr.
Sorry, I meant John Pablo Rabba.
Oh, yeah, Juan Pablo Rabba. Yeah,
Garcia's character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it speaks to, you know, how if you're a Latino actor in Hollywood, you know, I mean, it's the same if you're, you know, a Southeast Asian actor.
Yeah.
Or someone who is of Arabic descent in Hollywood, you know, you have your choice of terrorist or someone who's the victim of a terrorist.
Yeah.
And I think it's maybe the same for Hispanic actors, either a drug dealer or someone's being victimized by a drug dealer. So there's that real world. So reality that the movie is rubbing against. So I think they should have gone completely to the realm of cartoonish and over the top, because I mean, at the end of the day, this is fantasy. This is pure 100% mm-hmm. fantasy that, you know, someone who is the victim of crime would turn themselves into the Punisher.
Yeah. And
basically,
I think he could have made it more like that, more like Taken, where it's, you know, it's just wild. It's just wild and crazy.
Take it as ludicrous.
Yeah.
But I mean, the whole point of the movie is that it's Liam Neeson, you know, star of Rob Roy, Liam Neeson, you know, being, you know,
just him.
Just being like completely James Bond like, I guess, is, which is interesting. I think Liam Neeson was probably Once Upon a Time attached to maybe playing James Bond. But, the idea of the older actor best known for his drama is now mm-hmm. being cast as like the tough guy and, you know, getting all toughed up. But yeah,
I'm glad he picked a female, Jennifer Garner, though, as the main character, and she was great in it.
Yeah, she's good.
Well, she was as great as she could possibly be when it comes to the character she played.
Yeah, I mean, the mystery of Jennifer Garner is like how this woman has like sort of fallen off the radar, and
yeah,
her only work in recent years seems to be those like Capital One commercials.
And I don't know what happened, because yeah. Dallas Buyers Club 2014, she was remarkable in it, right?
Yeah.
And then Mother's Day didn't get critical reviews, but Gary Marshall, right? It made a lot of money. And his yeah. films always get like a lot
probably,
of buzz and people yeah. love it. So
yeah, it's probably an easy check too.
I don't know what happened to her.
Yeah, and it's I think in the Cineplex pre-show there was an interview with her where she's like, you know, I get offered a lot of action roles. It's like, obviously, because you're 5 years on Alias.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like either A, she's like sort of become one of these actresses that, you know, for some reason doesn't get hired, or the other option is she maybe doesn't seek as many opportunities as you would think, because she's more fine just like sort of
she's probably seeking
living her life.
she has probably gotten like a ton of offers of her being like side characters in big well done films, but I think she I guess wants to be the main one, so she's gonna have to kind of back down for films like Peppermint.
Yeah,
that could be it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I don't know, but it just seems mysterious to me who, you know, someone who was so promising, you know, going back to Daredevil yeah. where she was Elektra.
Yeah.
And, you know, being in Catch Me If You Can, and then you know, being cast. Yeah, Juno. Yeah.
A ton of things.
Yeah.
And like widespread different types of films.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, this is a film, so at least she's doing something. So if you want to just support her, hey, go support it.
Jennifer Garner. She needs your help.
And the All-American Rejects lead singer, Tyson Ritter, he was in it, and it was like a weird cameo. So if you're a huge All-American Rejects fan, you should go see this, because there's just the one scene. Can you remember that homeless individual where the cop asked him a question?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the guy from All-American Rejects. He was just in it for like 10 seconds. Just him in the shot. I don't know what the director wanted from that, but
that is a deep cut.
Yeah,
that was a deep cut.
It was weird. But like I said, yeah, if you like them, I guess check it out if you're a huge supporter of Tyson Ritter.
Oh, man. All-American Rejects. Now, there's someone else who probably needs your support. I can't.
Yeah.
When was the last time they released an album? Who knows?
I don't know.
But I think to come back to the main point is, you know, that Death Wish remake came out earlier this year.
Mm.
And I haven't seen it, But, you know, I did watch the trailer, and it did, in so much as talking about the controversy of, like, blaming gangbangers and going out there and getting your own, like, Old West justice, I think that that movie feels like the more harmful one than this. And, I, you know, again, I haven't seen Death Wish, but, you know, knowing Eli Roth's oeuvre of, you know, sort of the, you know, you talked about how graphic violence. How graphic the violence in Peppermint is, but I actually didn't find it that graphic.
Really?
I thought, like, you know, granted that scene that we play with the judge where she has his hands nailed to his desk.
I'm still thinking about that, so that might be why I'm viewing it as, like, extremely gory.
But, yeah, but, like, there's no kind of, like, headshots with, like, red mist, mm-hmm. you know, coming out of the back of people's heads or something like that. It almost seems rather restrained. I mean, yeah, like, there's no shortage of gunplay in it, but I don't think it's anywhere near as gory as it could have been.
Yeah, there could have been a lot more of that, more physical fights.
Which really. I think...
And like we were saying earlier, we could have seen more of her, you know, like, burning that dude's house down and the other things that we just hear for, like, a couple seconds on the news that she did.
Right. You know, there's... It just seems to me that maybe Morell was conscious of, at least in some level, of not playing into the fantasy too much.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, again, that goes back to my original point, that there was all the more reason to go sort of more cartoonish. Not necessarily more violent. But, you know, the action, I think, is where the movie kind of finds its footing. It's not necessarily in where when it's trying to characterize. And even in that, there's, like, the woman who is her rival when her family was alive,
yeah,
who was like the in the Fireflies, who chases her out of the mall because, like, this is where we sell Firefly cookies.
That was a little silly.
That was silly. And then when Riley North goes to see her later in the film,
I wasn't on her side when it came to that.
No.
I was not on Riley North's side. She, the blonde mom we're talking about, she wasn't like a great mom or friend, but
yeah,
I don't know if she deserved
She was a terrible human being, but, you know, you don't deserve to have the Terminator come in your house
straight
at night
knock you out.
And, you know, threaten to burn down your house. And having her pee her pants was a little much.
Yeah.
When Riley's threatening her, it's just, because the character's like a friggin' cartoon.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, maybe that goes back to, like, you know, maybe it's TMI on the whole, her family is killed. You know, it's like,
yeah.
Anytime we see that in, anytime they remake Punisher or they remake Batman, it's like we have to see people die.
Yeah, but it's better
to
quick
understand.
Glimpses.
Yeah, and it's like, we don't need to, like, autopsy that again and again. It, you know, I think we can all understand enough the pain of you're seeing your family die without having to actually see the family die, or also having to color in this bizarro detail of the daughter's birthday party is ruined because this other horrid woman is throwing a party so all the friends can't go to the little girl's party. And then which forces them to go to the carnival, which, you know, sets up the murder of the family. And also, it's the thing is, the husband is struggling. He has a I don't know if he owns the garage.
Yeah,
or
he's got some
garage.
Weird stuff going on.
But you know, they have money issues, and so he has a friend who's trying to get him to, you know, commit some crime against Garcia. And the husband, like, ultimately decides, like, I love my family so much,
yeah,
I'm not gonna do crime.
Yeah,
and of course it's too late because Garcia's gotten wind of this, and so the dad and the family, save for Riley, end up dying.
Yeah. They were just quickly trying to make us like the father.
Right.
Giving him that line just
Whereas
so we
instead
react
of,
a bit to him dying.
Yeah, it either should have been like a random thing, because then that speaks to her outrage.
Mm-hmm.
Or it should have been, you know, if you wanted to go to the more serious character-driven route, then the husband should have been involved in the crime, or should have done the crime, and it was kind of payback, which then it speaks to kind of like the circular nature of vengeance and all that. I mean, that may be too complex for what they were going for here, which is just to watch Jennifer Garner kick butt and like take out a bunch of bad guys, but there is some friction between, I think, wanting to be serious and wanting to be this sort of over-the-top thing.
Mm-hmm. I think they should have had Eli Roth direct it, like we were talking about with Gore, because he would have made it. So Jennifer Garner's plan after what happened was to kill all of the daughters and husbands of the cartel people, and that would have been wild.
Yeah, there's a scene where Garcia's daughter comes out of her bedroom when she's about to kill him. It's like, come on. The guy who's
just because she saw the kid, she decides not to do it. Like,
but I mean, come on, the guy who's praying to Santa Muerte has a nice family.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know, man. Cesario, too. He, that one person of the cartel had a nice family, too.
That's true. That's another great sort of example of. Because, I mean, the Sicarios are obviously trying to deal with, like, mm-hmm. the issues. It's all, you know, it's all about the issues. But, there's just too much. There's too much mm-hmm. with Peppermint in terms of, you know, be cartoony, be the fantasy wish fulfillment, or, you know, try to create more of a balance. And I don't think it manages to achieve that very well.
No.
It's...
I don't know what he was expecting, but he did not achieve it.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, like, Taken is really a good sort of... Like, as soon as they started to franchise it, I feel like it's with... What Wade Wilson says in Deadpool, it's like there has to be a point where you just ask yourself, maybe he's a bad father. It's mm-hmm. you know, but when you just like take the original Taken on its own as a sort of one off as a story, I think it does everything it sets out to do. Whereas I'm not sure
this one does.
Peppermint yeah. does. And I don't think that has anything to do with Jennifer Garner. I'm not sure that has anything to do with, like, the actors. And, like, John Gallagher Jr. has this mustache in the film that automatically – that just basically says, look, I'm a dirty cop.
Yeah, I did not enjoy his character. He's not a bad actor or anything.
No, he's not a bad actor, but, you know, there's just, like, why do you have that horrid mustache? You are not Hercule Poirot. Shave it off, or I'm going to think you're going to die with a bullet in your head before the end because you're a dirty cop.
Yeah.
Which, spoiler alert – happens.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what though, I did not expect him to be a bad cop. So that was a surprise. I'm not saying it was a like fun surprise, but it was a surprise.
Well,
like,
there surprises. Was I mean, there was always gonna be a dirty cop. It was either gonna be him or Ortiz. But
yeah.
I'm glad they didn't go with the Hispanic cop as the
That would have been messed up, yeah.
Yeah. if we can get our virtual signaling at least that right, then maybe we're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, sadly, Peppermint opened number 3 at the box office this
week. Really?
So we may not see Peppermint 2.
Well,
Peppermint
you said 3. Sadly. What opened to number 1 and 2?
Well, The Nun was number 1. Oh. And I think Crazy Rich Asians was number 2.
Oh, again? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So should people see Peppermint, would you say, or?
I think this might be a Netflix.
Yeah, wait for Netflix. It'll be on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think all the Takens are or were on Netflix.
Yeah. They might have taken them down so people would want to go see this. Yeah. Also, that's the thing. If you haven't seen Taken, just watch it instead. And then maybe another really great Jennifer Garner film.
Unless you want to send a statement to support either Jennifer Garner and or All American Rejects.
Yeah. Yes. Especially All American Rejects.
Peter needs that new album.
Yeah. Don't move along. Continue loving them and support them through this film.
Which is exactly the message the good people at Screen Gems had intended when they funded this film.
Oh, at least one of their agents knew that was probably their intention or something like that.
Well, we'll have to wait for the DVD director's commentary to find out.
Oh, yeah.
That's it for End Credits this week. We hope you liked it. And if you do like it, you can hear it again at endcreditsradioshow.com. You can find us on social media at End Credits Radio Show on Facebook and End Credits Radio on Twitter. And Peter...
Mr. Tarak, as per usual, Twitter and YouTube.
Sorry, I hit the wrong music.
It's okay. I liked it.
This is not a professional show. It's semi-professional, and so sometimes we hit the wrong buttons. Where can you find me? I am back here tomorrow, Thursday, at 5 p.m. for News and Politics on Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson or go to GuelphPolitico.ca. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back here next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more end credits, and we will be doing what, Peter?
What?
I was trying to get you to say we'll be
doing the Predator. We'll be doing Predator.
All right.
I haven't seen it yet. We'll be doing Predator. Who knows what my reaction will be?
Well, that's more than enough reason you need to tune in next Wednesday at 2 p.m. We'll see you then.